Coming up on Weekend America.
For Marilyn, childhood meant two different worlds.
I couldn't try on clothes in the department store. That's what the United States was like. But on base, with my dad in his uniform, I was with a hero.
And her dad was one of the Tuskegee Airmen. I'm John Moe. Also, you might have a hard time defining what kind of music San Diego's Lady Dottie plays, and she's not much help.
This is new for me, the punk music, mixing it up with the blues, rock and roll, and gospel.
Hear what that sounds like. And there are advantages to living in a town where everyone knows everyone else, but it makes being a cop there kind of weird.
Chad! Chad, were you arguing with Ricky earlier?
It's Weekend America. Everything you need to know after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe in St. Paul. I don't know about you guys. I had a very emotional week. It got cold, and I went bananas. And not just cold, minus 22 the other morning when I woke up. And I was inside and freaked out, rattled, confused, terrified. I couldn't even sit down. What? I kept saying, looking at the thermometer. What? But my wife pointed out that at least it was sunny outside, and also we were inside, a heated house. That helped a little. But I just stood there for the longest time, staring at the thermometer, slack-jawed, stunned by mercury. I'm glad it's all the way up to a balmy 20 this weekend. What are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, I am attending a dinner party at my parents' house and going grocery shopping and cleaning my house.
I'll probably brew my second batch of beer.
Probably going to wind up playing an open mic. They have an open mic in Mount Vernon.
And probably cleaning up my Christmas tree.
My friend's birthday is this weekend, and we're going to Adams Morgan because, you know, it's going to be a lot of people down there for the inauguration and stuff.
I may try to do some of the events, but it'll all depend on weather and crowds, and I might enjoy watching it more on TV.
As you could guess, those last two voices were from Washington, D.C. We also heard from Portland, Oregon, and Concord, New Hampshire. President-elect Barack Obama has been in Washington for a couple of weeks now, but he arrives there again today, completing a ceremonial train trip from Philadelphia to the Capitol, along with Joe Biden. It's all part of the preparations for Tuesday's inaugural, and at that ceremony on Tuesday, Elizabeth Alexander will read a commissioned poem. She says it was the hardest poem she ever wrote.
Just grappling with the blank page, wrestling with the words, it's a very, very, very difficult process because in trying to live up to the very powerful words and sentiments that we've heard throughout this campaign and after the election from people talking about what this day means to them, I've just tried to keep myself as open as possible so that I can make the poem.
Inaugural poet Elizabeth Alexander. Her poem is being kept secret until Tuesday. Also attending Tuesday's inauguration, members of the Tuskegee Airmen. They made history during World War II as the country's first black military pilots. They shot down Nazi planes overseas, and they fought racism at home. Poet Marilyn Nelson has a personal connection to the iconic airmen. Her father was one of them.
We were stationed in Oklahoma when I was in seventh grade. I couldn't try on clothes in the department store in the local town. I couldn't have an ice cream cone inside an ice cream parlor. You could buy it through a window and eat it outside, but you couldn't eat it inside. That's what the United States was like. But on base, with my dad in his uniform, I was with a hero. While they were at Tuskegee, most of the people who were there to train them were white Southerners. So they had to prove themselves against the low expectations that their own military trainers had of them. There was one incident, a group of officers, they're certified pilots, and they went to the officers' club to have dinner. They're officers, and the officers' club arrested them because they were black. My father died when I was in college, so I couldn't go to him for his stories when I started writing about Tuskegee Airmen. I was introduced to Bert Wilson. Bert was a member of the 332nd Fighter Group. This is the most famous group of Tuskegee Airmen. And I started working on poems about his stories. One of those poems was Porter. One time, this was in the 60s, and I was a full bird colonel. They called me in Kentucky and asked me to pick up an aircraft somebody had crashed down in Louisiana. I was supposed to fly it to a base in New Mexico and go back to Kentucky on a commercial flight. It's tricky business flying a plane that's been crashed. You can never tell what might still be wrong with it. Okay, I flew the plane to New Mexico and got on a flight back home. I was in full dress uniform, decorations and medals and shit all over my chest. The distinguished flying cross with two bronze oak leaf clusters, the bronze star, a couple of commendation medals, a European African Middle East campaign medal with four bronze service stars. When we landed in Chicago, I was standing in the aisle when a lady, a little gray-haired white lady, asked me to lift her suitcase down. I said, of course, and carried it on out into the terminal for her. When I put it down, she handed me a dime as a tip. He looks down, then he looks at me and grins. I took it, too. The pain of this poem is that this woman is faced with somebody who's wearing a uniform covered with medals, and she thinks he's a Pullman porter. She gives him a dime. The triumph of the poem for me, and what made Bert cry, I think, is that when he told me the story and he said she gave him a dime as a tip, he said, I took it too, and he shook his head because he was ashamed of taking it. But when I wrote it, I made it a triumph. I make him grin. And I think that that's what the poem says, is that it didn't matter what this woman thought. What mattered was who he was, what he had done, his own greatness, not what she saw in him.
Poet Marilyn Nelson, reading from her book, The Home Place, published by Louisiana State University Press. Larissa Anderson produced our story. So, again, on Tuesday, in case you haven't gathered this from every available media source, Barack Obama will become the next president of the United States of America. For some perspective on the significance of that, we wanted to speak to some previous presidents of the United States of America, and we found some. The Seattle rock band The Presidents of the United States of America are best known for hit songs in the 1990s like Lump and Peaches. We reached out to them and asked them to compose a song just for Inauguration Day. And joining us, Chris Ballew and Jason Finn, premiering their new song exclusively on Weekend America. This is Moving In.
Months after Santa's sleigh, changes come to USA, bringing a new dawn again. Today Obama's moving in. Yes, we can's now, yes we did. Capping an historic bid, got the yard sign and the pin. Today Obama's moving in. Finally, November came, bigger than a playoff game. Stuck it out and got the win. Today Obama's moving in, filling up the voter rolls. Record numbers to the polls, young and old and fat and thin. Today Obama's moving in. Toe-to-toe with Hillary, sounded like an enemy. Now they're friends and she's at state. Today Obama's feeling great. The GOP sent their A-game. Palin and old what's-his-name. Bad year for Republicans. Today Obama's moving in. Atmosphere. beer without a pause. Truth Dig, Drudge, and Daily Cause. Red State and Politico, until our little heads explode. CBS or NBC, Alan Combs or Hannity, or CNN or NPR. Blaring hour after hour, campaign season was no fun. Iowa to Oregon, frazzled nerves were wearing thin. Obama's finally moving in.
So that's Moving In by the Presidents of the United States of America. Chris and Jason, we should state up front, you are Obama supporters. At least that's what I infer.
No.
Absolutely.
Well, we are now, John. Yeah, come on, we love a winner.
You got a bit on
No, yeah.
We just can't abide an underdog. We can't. Yes, we are Obama supporters completely.
Okay. But by the same token, you sound really relieved in this song that the whole thing is over. There's words like finally stuck it out is in there.
I felt it was important to try to impart the sense of the whole thing taking decades, it seemed like, hundreds of years. The election cycle, we all know it's gotten longer and longer every time we go through it. But did it not seem like they started campaigning just hours after the last election?
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you sit down to write this song, is it a hagiography towards Obama? Is it about the institution of the presidency? Like how do you choose of all the things you could make the song about? And let's start with the lyrics.
I think the waiting is the hardest part, as Tom Petty.
There you go, and you do need to hold on loosely, but don't let go.
Yeah, it is, seriously, I think I like that. There's tension in the song, and when we finally get to the moving in, it's like, ah!
Well, right. You know, I think the whole sort of three-year cycle, it's far too big for a little two-and-a-half-minute pop song. So
right.
What we were trying to do is sort of encapsulize different little elements. So there's a little section about the beginning of the candidacy. There's a little section sort of covering the Hillary and McCain, the various adversaries. And then there's the whole sort of second half, post-solo, if you will, or post-middle-eight, is kind of like, when is this thing going to be over? Now that it's over and there's been a resounding butt-kicking, and it's I've felt really happy for the last couple months, it's really time for the finger pointing and the haha you lost sort of atmosphere to resolve itself into the hard work phase where we can just sit back and criticize everybody
equally,
because there's going to be a lot of that to go around for the next couple of years.
That's the case.
Yeah, Chris Blue and Jason Finn of the Presidents of the United States of America. Thanks for talking and thanks for your music.
Thanks, John.
Talking and rocking. Thanks, John.
Moving In by the Presidents of the United States of America, world premiered right here on Weekend America, will be available as a free download at weekendamerica.org.
Two months after Santa's sleigh, changes come to USA, bringing a new dawn again.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week.
A plane goes down in the Hudson. Good news that all the people in it survived. Bad news for those birds, of course. The good, the bad, and the no news of the week, next on Weekend America. From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. Does the news make perfect sense to you? Everything is as it should be? No mystery to it at all? If so, turn off the radio for a bit, go get a sandwich, come back in a few minutes. Otherwise, we're here to help you sort it into categories of good news, bad news, or no news with our panel, Simon Doonan, the creative director of Barney's. Hello, Simon.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Very chilly here.
Oh, good. Author Nancy French. Hello, Nancy.
Hey, John.
And author and associate editor at The Atlantic, Rehan Salam. Hello, Rehan.
Hi, John.
Let's start with the story that everyone is talking about. On Thursday, in New York, a U.S. Airways Airbus 320 had trouble in both engines after being struck by birds shortly after takeoff. Unable to return to LaGuardia or land anywhere else, the pilot dropped the plane into the Hudson River. 150 passengers plus crew were all rescued. Injuries, but no fatalities. What kind of news is that? Good news, bad news, or no news? Simon, the New Yorker, let's start with you.
Well, I would have to create a whole new category for this. This is orgasmic news. And apart from being, you know, profoundly glad that all the people were safe, I was very happy for the short people on board, because apparently a lot of people smacked their heads into the roof of the plane and sustained neck injuries. That was one of the few things that happened. And as a short person myself, you know, one looks for those opportunities to feel smug about being petite.
I was telling the kids about it last night at dinner. My husband and I were explaining the wonderful, wonderful outcome of events. And my son, who is a big, big fan of ornithology, very tearfully said, "But did they die?" And we explained that all the passengers got out safely, but he was referring to the geese. It gave me pause about the way I'm raising my kid. But otherwise, I think it's, you know, great news for the people who survived.
I think it's a reminder of all the things that can go wrong at any given time. I mean, think about the air traffic system in general, which is just so kind of miserably broken. You have these guys working in air traffic control who are like hopped up all the time, you know, and it's one of the most, you know, customer dissatisfied bureaucracies. I mean, you have all
incredible
these people who are
stress,
just working
yeah.
long hours. Exactly. And, you know, of course things are going to go wrong. Things are going to go wrong all the time.
I took it completely the other way. When I heard about it, I thought this is a reminder that it's incredibly rare for planes to crash given the number that are flying up in the air. It's much more dangerous to do what I just did, which is get in a New York cab and come roaring uptown. That's statistically infinitely more dangerous.
So good news for fatalism, bad news for a structured universe. All right, let's move on. In Congress, House Democrats have proposed an $825 billion bill aimed at stimulating the economy. The bill, crafted in concert with the incoming Obama administration, calls for spending increases in education, aid to states for Medicaid assistance, and many public works projects aimed at creating new jobs. What kind of news is this bill?
I think it is basically good news. I think that the country wants to see some kind of action taken. And I think that having it, you know, be roughly this size means that, you know, you can take another bite at the apple. You can see how this works. So I'm broadly optimistic. I think we have people who are pretty pragmatic and results oriented who are doing their best. And, I'm not sure it'll do any good, but I think it's good news in terms of American stick-to-itiveness.
Well, it's hard for me to be enthusiastic about it. As a conservative, I do feel like, just doing something for the sake of having, you know, the emotional satisfaction of action is not satisfying to me. I feel like it's there's little doubt it'll help in the short term. But the threat is that it'll cause deficits, risk inflation, and fail to address the structural issues that created the recession in the first place.
A Band-Aid, but not stitches.
Yeah, so more like there's a disease that we're ignoring because of this stimulus Band-Aid.
I do wish there was a stimulus package for the fashion and luxury business.
Will somebody please think of the fashion designers?
Yes, hello. But when I first read it about this, I thought, oh, maybe America's going to become like the nanny state that they have in England, where the emphasis is on sort of taking care of people to the point of sort of infantilizing them. And is that it? Maybe that's Nancy's concern, is it? I don't know.
Well, I feel like, you know, if people lived their individual lives better and more wisely, we wouldn't have as many problems as we have.
You know, I'm a believer in free trade, but, you know, we're living in this kind of strange, different world. I'm a believer in fiscal conservatism. But, you know, when you have, you know, a world where the United States is driving the global economy, but as Nancy says, we're heavily in debt. You know, I mean, there's a lot riding on this. And so I think that $800 billion in a $13 trillion economy, you know, maybe that's what you need.
Last topic. In the new issue of the journal Nature, scientist Larry Young posits that love will soon be enough understood from a neurochemical point of view where a potion to make you fall in love could be available. New York Times reporter John Tierney asked him if that meant that potions to make you immune from love could be made as well, and Young said, yeah. What kind of news is that?
It's no news.
What? Love potions, Nancy. Anti-love potions, too.
It's not going to happen. You know, that if you read the article, it's basically, you know, we have a drug. Scientists may have discovered a chemical which possibly could have influenced in rats feelings of love or not love. It's, you know, it's completely ridiculous. It's no news. It's not going to happen. I believe in God's plan for your life and fate, and I believe that things are orchestrated. And so I just think this is a bunch of hooey.
Well, I think it's great news for perverts, I suppose. I mean, the first thing that sprang to mind was Midsummer Night's Dream. And one can only think people will use this for sort of malignant, horrid purposes where they'll make people fall in love with donkeys or with inappropriate people or, you know, it'll be the new roofie.
I see this, though, as part of the further demystification of the world. I think that, you know, when you're talking about these love potions, they're just an extension of the ways in which we use items of clothing and the way that we make ourselves up and the sense that we use, you know, in order to attract other people. So much of this is so kind of instinctive and operates beneath the level of the rational mind. I'm, you know, 29, and a lot of the men my age, you know, it's very hard for them to be in relationships because they're constantly weighing their options. They feel like they have to be. You know, is there something better out there? What's next? And I just can imagine a world where everyone's spending thousands and thousands of dollars on love potions, and other people are spending them on anti-love potions, and then you spend money on a super-duper love potion that will defeat other people's anti-love potions, and it'll just be this crazy arms race. So bad news. Let's put it that way.
That's the news of the week. Now it all makes sense. Go forth with a clear mind. Panel, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Simon Doonan is the creative director of Barney's New York. He's also author of Eccentric Glamour, Creating an Insanely More Fabulous You. Rehan Salam is associate editor of The Atlantic and co-author of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Nancy French is the author of A Red State of Mind.
Weekend America is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This program is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, and KPCC Los Angeles.
The latest thing among the trendy, sophisticated crowd in San Francisco? Hog butchering. How do you find earrings to go with your gore-spattered apron? Ahead on Weekend America. From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. Seems like a long time since Barack Obama was elected, doesn't it? Almost 10 weeks, in fact. Of course, presidents used to wait 4 months to take office. That was getting kind of awkward. So in 1933, Congress passed the 20th Amendment to shorten the transition. In our series, Conversations with America, we've been asking writers and thinkers about the idea of transition. Laetiam Thuy is a poet and performance artist. She and her family went through a transition when they left Vietnam by boat in 1978. They settled in California, but we caught up with Thuy on a visit to New York.
We're going to 111 Mott Street, which is the new Chow Chow. And they have 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 ducks in the window. So we have 3 different kinds of condiments, 4, 5, 6. We have chilies of 3 different types, and we have, I think, vinegar, fish sauce, and soy sauce, and that's hoisin. And I'm going to get what I always get, which is fish cake noodle soup with the fat white rice noodles.
It's a place that I feel like I have history with, though I've never spoken with those people about how I feel about the place. But it's just one of my most favorite places on earth. They're usually about 6 men working, and they have like uniform versions of tuxedos, kind of. To your right is the cook, and he's got, you know, chef's whites on and a big hat. There are all these vats of broths that he's stirring. But it's like, you know, I go into this place and there's 6 guys and all of them could be my father to some extent.
Can I have extra cilantro?
I'm sorry.
No cilantro? Okay. Scallion's fine. How about, can I have lemon? Yeah?
There's a kind of dignity to them that reminds me of my father, though my father never worked in kitchens. My father was a gardener in Southern California, and I felt growing up that his clients didn't know his story. You know, you get into a cab and you don't know the cabbie's story. The gardener trims your hedges, the cook makes your food. And, you know, in every day we come up against people whose histories we don't know at all. And I think America's really made up by so many people like that. For example, I mean, our family, as refugees of the war in Vietnam, we wouldn't have come here if that war hadn't happened. And one of the things that I've put a lot of thought into since my father moved back to Vietnam in 2003 is how he never became an American in the way that perhaps he had hoped, but that the hope was that his children would become Americans and feel at home here. Any president of mine should be into noodle soup. And I think there are a lot of resonances between Obama going into the White House and people coming to this country as immigrants, in that you have the roar of the real, you know, the enormous amount of responsibilities, the enormous number of new things to learn, and the enormity of what to do can burden the mind so much that you can't act. I think that the only way to stay afloat is to be in check with the intactness of your own body and your own mind. And so it's important to have a relationship with the body where the mind is able to be quiet and calm. It's like those Chinese ladies who go out early in the morning and do Tai Chi in the park. I mean, that protects them. You know, most immigrants and refugees don't leave their native countries by choice. I'm an American citizen. I make my living as a writer. I work in English, which is a language I was forced to pick up very quickly in order to translate for my father. I think that he feels that I've made it here. But for me, the heartbreak is that he couldn't somehow. For most immigrant children, the parents' generation sacrifices for the children's generation. But the extent of that sacrifice sometimes seems devastating to me.
Laetiam Thuy is the author of The Gangster We Are All Looking For. She is currently at work on her second novel. You can learn more about her when you go to weekendamerica.org for information on her and all of our stories.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. San Francisco's Bernal Heights neighborhood is home to some of the nation's most orthodox foodies. You can find everything there, from organic persimmons to grass-fed buffalo meat to gourmet cheese. And for the gourmands who must know everything about where their food comes from, there's even a shop where you can stop being a mere consumer and become a processor. Yep, you can carve up your own pig. Lisa Morehouse reports.
Okay, first cut we're going to make is to remove the head. Cut down till you get to the bone.
Tia Harrison is the head butcher at Avadano's Holly Park Market in San Francisco. She's talking to four guys in white aprons staring at the carcass of a whole suckling pig splayed out on a butcher block. One of those guys is Chris Perry, who works in a research lab. But today, he's learning the art of butchery.
I see these prepackaged, you know, meats in the store, and I know there's something more to it than just that. So it's getting to know the whole animal, getting a better idea of the cuts of meat that I regularly eat, seeing the whole process.
He's come to the right place. Avadano's is an old-time butcher shop with a contemporary attitude. They have a sign reading, "We put the butch in butcher." The three women owners offer cuts of locally and sustainably raised meat. Co-owner Angela Wilson.
It's just kind of a different way of thinking about food. It's not really easy to find, like, pig butts with the skin on them and all the fat and stuff like that anywhere in town. We sell tubs of lard, and people want tubs of lard. They want duck fat.
It's the type of place where you can buy a whole chicken with a head and feet still attached.
That's a chicken, and that's what they look like. And if you don't like it, then maybe you should be a vegetarian.
And for the committed carnivore, Avadano's offers the butchery class. For $300, San Francisco urbanites can pay for an experience that barely earns minimum wage in your typical meatpacking plant.
We're going to start by explaining what we're going to be using to break down the animals. Everyone's going to have a boning knife.
Tia Harrison explains how they'll separate the pig into its four primals: leg, loin, shoulder, and belly. But before they can get to those meaty sections, students must remove the extremities, like the head and the feet. San Francisco advertiser John Jakubowski feels for where the pig's head and neck meet, then uses a boning knife to slice through the flesh before taking a saw to the bone.
I'm cutting the head off of a pig. Oh, now he's looking at me. Great. Hi, bud.
Chris Perry steps up next to remove the hocks, the joint right above the foot. It's been used for centuries by thrifty cooks to flavor beans and greens. He scores through the flesh on one side of each foot, flips the pig, and repeats on the other side with some trepidation.
Should I have sawed this before I... Got it. Little nerve-wracking first one.
They cut out the ham, which is in the hind leg of the pig. They separate the shoulder, which is great for barbecue, and then saw through the spine.
All right, so we're going to move on to the belly. The belly is the best part, certainly.
You find pork belly everywhere. Yeah. Every restaurant you go in now, you can get pork belly.
And they use a cleaver to separate the ribs from the belly, the fatty part of the pig where bacon comes from.
When you do this, I think there are certain points where you have to make decisions. You know, whether you want, you know, more of a short rib as opposed to a tenderloin, as opposed to, you know, a Denver rib.
With blood on their aprons and sweat on their brows, Chris Perry and John Jakubowski survey their efforts.
Proud of my handiwork here. It looks good.
Well, before it kind of looked like a wild animal, and now it looks like something I'd see in a butcher shop. It's all tied up and ready to go.
Here we have the loin chops.
As Harrison gives each of them a bag full of meat they butchered, Jakubowski says he'll now approach the butcher's counter with a lot more knowledge and respect.
I think walking out of here, I'm going to know a hell of a lot more than I did walking in, but I'm going to let them do the work because it's a lot of work.
In San Francisco, I'm Lisa Morehouse for Weekend America.
Snapshots from the butchering class, because maybe you want to look at them, are at weekendamerica.org. Thank you. you're in LA tonight, the Redwood Bar downtown offers a unique entertainment option, Lady Dottie and the Diamonds. They're a San Diego band, and the type of music they play is... See, a lot of bands, when they're asked what kind of music they play, will give you a long answer about how they can't be constricted to one certain genre, when in truth, a lot of bands kind of can be constricted to one genre. Lady Dottie, however, may be the one case where specific descriptors, blues, punk, gospel, it just doesn't cover it. Weekend America producer Angela Kim heard a Lady Dottie CD recently, and she got kind of obsessed.
Dorothy Mae Whitsett, a.k.a. Lady Dottie, didn't grow up singing the blues. The only music she knew was gospel.
Well, I'm singing Mary. Tell Martha not to moan. Oh, Mary. Tell Martha not to moan. When I was a kid, gospel music was the thing I did because we went to church 7 days a week, and that's what my mother allowed us to sing.
These days, her music isn't gospel. It sounds more like this. How she got here started when she was a kid. Whitsett took care of her 12 siblings while her parents worked.
I did all the cooking, all the cleaning. My mother and father, they worked. And I was the mother and father of my other brothers and sisters.
Sometimes she even went to work with her mom to help make ends meet.
We used to go to the cotton field and pick cotton. My mother used to take us to cotton field because there were so many of us, you know. And we had to get the job done, making the money. So she took all of us. And then I used to see the planes go overhead and thinking about I should be on it. And so that's where I really knew that I was going to go somewhere.
Whitsett did leave. At 19, she took a job as a nanny in New York City. From there, she made her way to New Jersey and Atlanta, working blue-collar jobs like house cleaning and cooking, and also taking gigs singing at small clubs. But instead of singing about Jesus, she sang about love and being wronged. Blues music had made it into her life. She never really did hit it big until she wound up in San Diego. That's where she met Joe Guevara.
Well, Joe, he's played piano, harp, and guitar. We started about 10 years ago, and he was working at the restaurant playing piano by himself, and I was the chef there, and I used to come out of the kitchen and help him out every night when I get off and sing a few songs, and that's really how it happened.
What happened is that she met Joe's band, the Diamonds. They're four white guys, young enough to be her sons, with messy hair, a bunch of hipsters who are into punk rock.
This is new for me, the punk music, mixing it up with the blues, rock and roll, and gospel. All in one. And it's amazing how music really sound when you really think about when you're singing it. Because I never thought that I would be singing with a punk rock band.
Whitsett embraces the ruckus. On stage, she's armed with a tambourine in one hand and a microphone in the other. Her energy is contagious. And somehow, even with all the noise in the background, she manages to stay true to the blues. So how does one have the blues when it's so beautiful outside?
Well, that's the blues. Blues is beautiful.
So does blues have to be sad music, you think? Because I always...
No, blues is not sad. It's the... up to the person if you want to make it sad, you know? It don't have to be sad at all, and it's not really sad. It's all up to the individual, you know, how you feel about it.
After decades of seeing the blues through the good times and bad, Whitsett's music career is just now taking off.
I'm 60-something years old.
and she's not planning on retiring anytime soon.
I'm going to sing as long as I can.
Lady Dottie and the Diamonds play tonight in Los Angeles at the Redwood Bar. You can watch their music video on our website, weekendamerica.org. Thirty-one degrees forecast in Washington for the inaugural, below freezing. Barack Obama will be wearing a coat. He'll be bundled up. He knows what happened to William Henry Harrison. You history buffs know what I'm saying. For weekend weather and fun, here's Jeannie Yandel.
The turkey originally came from Mexico, but before the Spanish got there, everyone thought wild turkeys were too mean and left them alone. Mount Airy, North Carolina wants to open a dialogue with the misunderstood bird at their turkey calling contest. Sunny and 33 to emote the most expressive gobble gobbles you can. How do you say, "Don't worry, Thanksgiving isn't for months" in turkey speak? Nothing warms you up like a big dose of adorable. At least Madison, Wisconsin hopes that's true for their Polar Dash. 21 and snowy for young kids to give sled rides to little plush polar bears. Cute! Then watch hundreds of puppies and baby unicorns cuddle their way down a huge rainbow. Cute! Okay, that last one isn't happening, but still, the kids and the little stuffed bears, that's darling. The oil industry is not well-loved right now. Port Arthur, Texas remedies that at their Cav Oilcade parade. Get it? Cav Oilcade? 60 degrees and sunny for oil industry-themed fashion show and treasure hunts. Remember, treasure hunters, black gold and Texas tea are the same thing. Just find some oil and you win the treasure hunt forever. For more information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm Jeannie Yandel for Weekend America.
A story of small towns, police work, journalism, and the strangest thing I've ever heard anyone do with a skunk, ever, next on Weekend America. From American Public Media, it's Weekend America. I'm John Moe. This weekend in the bohemian and pastoral enclave of Northern California, known as West Marin County, there will be a Shostakovich piano concert at the Point Reyes Dance Palace, and a few miles away, a concert by Afropop dance sensation Zulu Spear. These and other weekend events are listed in the local newspaper, the Point Reyes Light. But what most people turn to first in that paper are the more nefarious happenings reported in a weekly column called Sheriff's Calls. Reporter Nancy Mullane has been a longtime reader of the column, which she says is consistently charming and kind of bizarre, and sometimes more than kind of bizarre. Recently, she got a behind-the-scenes look at how the column gets made each week.
Tamales, 11:16 a.m. A man said that a leaf blower and a power drill had been stolen from the Church of the Assumption. Point Reyes Station, 4:18 p.m. Several cows were in the road. Ranch hands herded them back inside the fence. Muir Beach, 4:22 p.m. Upset caller reported two men were acting inappropriately while filming a video. They were wearing a wig and a hat, and there were children in the area. Deputies responded.
Point Reyes Station, deputies received a report of a verbal altercation following a minor traffic accident.
Let's see, Saturday, a vehicle rolled over on Lucas Valley Road. A resident reported memorabilia missing after a teen sleepover. That's kind of common when your kids have parties. You'll have 30 or 40 of their kids over here, and they'll clean up the house, but then they'll notice the cameras and all kinds of stuff missing. And, you know, it's like, well, who do you think did it? I don't know. So, I mean, they'd never know.
These are the sorts of things that show up every week in the Point Reyes Light. It's a tiny but Pulitzer Prize-winning paper, and it's got an impressive team of investigative reporters. But probably the most read part of the paper is the Sheriff's Calls column on page 3. For locals, it's half news, half gossip. And before a juicy or bizarre item lands in the column, it lands in the lap of local law enforcement, like Sheriff Deputy Richard Johnson.
We will sit in here and look at these things, and a lot of times they go, hey, I was on that call. Hey, wait a minute here. That's kind of what happened. And you kind of look at how they phrase it. Their wording sometimes kind of makes it funny.
Every day, the Sheriff's Department faxes an account of most of their calls to the newspaper. An editor picks over them, distilling the accounts down to a kind of social haiku. I'm sitting with Deputy Johnson in his office, and he's looking over the more than 60 calls from the previous week. He points to the one about the giant cloud of sand that blew across the highway.
Okay, I was on this one. So here's a lady who came in and said, hey, there's somebody sandblasting down here on Pelham Point Reyes Road. We drove down there and we said, and first of all, we're going, sandblasting? Okay, we'll check it out.
Johnson remembers driving down the road, and when he turned the corner,
holy crap, it looks like it's snowing. Because, I mean, just a 100-foot section of roadway just was like, you know, this fog, thick fog was moving in. So that was kind of funny, but, you know, as we told the guy, he goes, it's pretty serious. If there would have been a wreck out here, you probably would have been responsible.
Most of the calls don't qualify as criminal acts. Even so, when sheriffs respond to calls, they're loaded down with some serious firepower. Guns, tasers, and handcuffs. After 25 years on the job, Deputy Johnson has learned to be prepared for the worst. But most of the time, he says people are just knuckleheads. I'm driving with Johnson on his regular patrol through the pastoral landscape of Point Reyes when a call comes in on the radio. This is how an entry in the Sheriff's Call column begins. We head to Bolinas so Johnson can look for a guy who was reported to have been in a fight.
Well, let's see. There's Chad. He's the guy that got in the argument with Ricky. He's an old timer. He's been here. Chad. Chad, were you arguing with Ricky earlier?
No,
Okay, Chad. Very opinionated, Chad.
And yep, that call made it into the paper the following week. Bolinas, 12:15 p.m. Two people who were yelling and screaming at each other were urged to go their separate ways. But not every call gets in the newspaper, and that's a sore spot with the locals. For many, it's an honor for their brush with the law to show up in the Sheriff's Call column. And when it doesn't, they remember the one that got away. Gail Coppinger runs a fruit stand in Point Reyes Station, and a friend of hers stopped to help a woman who was parked on the side of the road.
And he gets to the window, and he looks in, and she's got a baby skunk in her arms, and she's nursing the skunk with breast milk. And he says, do you need any help? And she says, no, I'm fine. And so he quickly turns around and runs to his truck and drives to the nearest payphone and calls the sheriff because he wants the sheriff to come see this so that it'll make the sheriff's calls. But the sheriff refused to put it in the sheriff's calls, even though the sheriff did make a stop and make sure she was okay and she was still nursing the skunk. It didn't make the sheriff's calls. That's my sheriff's call story. And that's true story, not made up.
Across the street at the sheriff's station, Deputy Johnson is sitting, waiting, when another call comes over the scanner.
Report of a Mercedes dark blue cover driving with a man on top of the vehicle. Southbound 101 at
Seminary. On top of the car? I have not heard that one before.
We'll have to check the sheriff's calls next week to see if that call made it into the paper.
It's a weird one. You don't get this too often.
In Point Reyes Station, I'm Nancy Mullane for Weekend America.
Nancy passed along some of her favorite items from that paper, and there are too many to mention. One of my favorite, a store's burglar alarm sounded at 8:45 a.m. A deputy determined that children bouncing a ball off a wall of the store may have set off the alarm. That's it for another hour of American Public Media's Weekend America. Our program is produced with Ben Adair, Sasha Aslanian, Julia Barton, Rob Byers, who's riding his bike in the basement for many hours this weekend. Mark Sanchez, however, is cross-country skiing this weekend, kind of an indoor-outdoor duality. Desiree Cooper, Hillary Frank, Sam Keenan, and Michael Raphael. Also Christy Clark, Brendan Noonan, Michael May, Ocean Kalen, Ariel Kitch, Angela Kim, and Chris Wieg, who's going to a fancy French restaurant and having fancy French wine this weekend, which is fancy. Our theme music was created by Galactic. Our executive producer is Peter Clowney. Jim Russell created the show. Get a free podcast at weekendamerica.org. In case you haven't heard, I should point out that Weekend America is drawing to a close. January 31st, 2 weeks from today, will be our last show. The reasons are complicated, of course, but a one-second glance at the business section of any newspaper should go a long way to explaining it. My hope that we go the way of so many great canceled TV shows and reemerge as Weekend America, the movie. I wonder who should play me. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by
American Public Media.
Hi, this is John Moe, host of Weekend America. The weekends are for sweet reminiscences.
What I decided was that I would never have a favorite song and that instead I would hate all music forever.
You know, I don't like Hall & Oates anymore. That's how much I did not enjoy that situation.
We're making new memories, so you can go ahead and forget those old ones. Join us for the next Weekend America.